Hey friends, we wanted to apologize because Brian had some very bad internet difficulties this week where his connection dropped 3 times, actually, and we lost some of the audio in the beginning of the episode, but we believe we got a good edit, so it's still coherent, and the rest of the show came out really well with a good interview as well, so hope you enjoy the show.
7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother...
Welcome, friends, to episode 17 of Color of Magic. As usual, I am your host, Daquan Watson, and as always, I have my man, Brian, here with me. Man, I got to play with some Theros last week, or this week, I guess it's been, and man, this set is actually really awesome. Oh, and I also want to say thanks to everybody. We got positive feedback. Everybody seemed to like our format for our Theros review, if you want to call it that. So we'll kind of try to build on that for next time as well. But let's go ahead and jump right into our regular segments and just ask you, what did you learn last week? As for me, what I learned this past week, interestingly, for those of you that haven't seen it in action yet, Dream Trawler is a real card out of Theros. Yeah, so it's a 6-cost. I think it's like 2 white, 2 blue, and 2. It's a 3/5 flying lifelink. It gets +1 when you draw a card for the turn, and when it attacks, you get to draw, and you can discard a card to give it hexproof until end of turn. Yeah, so it's becoming, at least from what I've seen so far in Arena, it's becoming the go-to card as the finisher for people. So if you're playing, running up against, say, blue-white control, or in some cases, I've seen it once in Esper control as well. Really, it was more blue-white splashing black, but same difference. That's the type of finisher they're playing. Because those decks already tend to play finishers that are 5, 6, 7 mana anyway, traditionally. But one that can also gain you life and is hard to kill, like, that's right up their alley. But, yeah, like I said, cool card. It wasn't even really on my radar. I kind of looked at it, and I kind of was like, eh, I guess this is okay. But it turned out to be better than I expected. And we're definitely seeing more people playing that here the last couple of days. So just something to look out for if you're bouncing around Arena trying to play some ladder action. So good news, we didn't have a crazy amount of Magic news this week. However, we had a lot of interesting things that popped up in regards to, I guess you want to call it just pro play in general. So let's go ahead and hit them down. We have 3 different things. So let's go ahead and start at the top with, I guess the first bit of news that hit was the announcement of the Players Tour points. For those of you who don't know, you no longer have the Pro Tour. You have Players Tour events. Those are going to happen, I think they said 3 times throughout the year, but they're going to happen in 3 different regions all at the same time. So you have one in the Americas, you have one in Europe, one in Asia. And these are events that you can qualify for through your store events. I think there's qualifiers at Grand Prix and a few other ways. And these are kind of now, I guess we want to call them like attainable pro tours that you qualify, participate in this. And then if you finish, I think in the top 8 is the last announcement I saw, you will play in the Players Tour Finals is what they're calling it, which will also include all of the MPL players and everything else. That aside, one of the big issues around this has been, how do you discourage players from either wanting to or feeling bad if they don't go to the smaller of the events? Because logic stands to reason that the Asian events, wherever that happens, will tend to be smaller than the ones in Europe and smaller than the ones in the Americas. The way they decided to balance this, it was actually really interesting. So They've done the numbers and looked at how many people qualified for each one and the expected attendance and all that. And they figured all of the events will have enough, or they're assuming will have enough, to get to at least 15 rounds. So they're only giving match points for people we're calling them mythic points still. So you're only getting mythic points through 15 rounds. Then in the larger event, which is likely to be the Americas, you will have a 16th round, but that will be strictly for placing, not for any more points. Which is an interesting balance to handle that. And then also on that same sheet, they included the prize pools. So largest to smallest of the three regions, you have 250,000, 200,000, 150,000, with prizes going to either 110th place, 78th place, or 50th place. So if you qualify for these events, there's definitely some money to be had out there and a lot of points if you're trying to reach the MPL. I don't know. Maybe you would have some insight on this, Brian, but have there been other video game events and stuff where there's been multiple events like this at the same time that were awarding similar prizes? Because I've only seen stuff where there's been an event in each location, but not three at once.
Yeah, that's usually the way it works. Like everybody is in, you know, like Las Vegas for Evo, or, you know, insert huge tournament here. I don't know that there may be, but I'm not, off the top of my head, I can't think of any events that work specifically like that all around the world at the various.
Okay, that makes sense. Like I said, I didn't know of any, so it sort of felt like Wizards was having to make up a new thing to balance these a bit. And that's fine. You know, I think as much as people do want to give Wizards crap, and there have been some reasons to do that off and on, I think we do have to also be aware that what they do is different than what a lot of other games do. And they're having to find solutions that meet the needs of a very large number of people in multiple different parts of the world, all with different governing bodies that all have different laws and regulations and all have different expectations. And each player base is a different size. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. So, And they even said that here, that the reason this announcement came out the way it did is they've been purposely trying to put more time into looking at the numbers and figuring out the best possible solution for everybody. So kudos to them. I think it's a cool first step for trying such a different type of event, and it feels reasonably fair.
And well, as I said, we give them grief when they've earned it, but let's be honest, there's a graveyard full of card games that couldn't figure this out as well as Wizard has.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen...
I played quite a few of them.
Yeah, true. I mean, I probably have... Hell, I know I still have some sitting in a closet somewhere, honestly. There's a bunch that have come and gone. And their organized play hits a lot of these same struggles and handles it a lot. And they've handled them very, very differently, usually significantly worse. There may be one or two things we liked about some of those organized play programs, but they've missed on way more than Wizards has, which partially led to the demise of some of these games, too.
And same is true, like, you know, people in video games, people bang on, you know, EA. And, yeah, they mess up a lot, but not as much as all their competitors did, apparently, or they'd not still be in business.
That's true. I mean, we can hate all we want, but at the end of the day, we're still here playing the games, right?
Playing the game, talking about the game, streaming the game. I haven't even calculated how much time a week I spend with Magic, and I'm kind of scared to.
All right, moving forward to the Players Tour promos that we also got announced, I believe, on the 17th or 18th of last week. So this was pretty cool because we got all the qualifier date ranges and which Pro Tour series they qualified you for. And we got to see the promos that you'll get for participating in these events. So we have a Cryptic Command, Surgical Extraction, and Aether Vial. The cool part is that all three of these promos are significant cards. All three of them are very pricey. So I don't know what these promos are going to go for yet.
Oh, man.
But these are cool. I mean, this is a good set of promos to have throughout the year for people trying to qualify for these events.
And the fact that people are going to want them, it's going to be trending on Twitter. People are going to be selling kidneys and whatnot. And hey, that gets people talking. You know, everybody's trying to shank somebody to get one of these cards.
And I'll tell you this, I think it kind of got buried a little bit. It wasn't one of the announcements I really saw people talking about. I think with everything else going on and people talking about the other announcement, you know, around the points and everything, this kind of just came up and was buried 2 or 3 days later by the other news.
We call that doing a Michael Jackson, you know, or, oh my God, Farrah Fawcett died, and then Michael Jackson died, and for a while, everybody just kind of unfortunately forgot that Farrah Fawcett had died.
That's fair. But, I mean, let's, being serious, though, these cards are going to be definitely sought after. I think collectors are definitely going to want them. And the Aether file has new, really cool art on it, too. So, good on them. I think this is a way to motivate some people. And these are cards that'll, honestly, for some people, even help recoup some of their costs. You know, they'll be able to get 20, 30, 40 bucks for these cards for going to these events or whatever, spending their gas to drive to them or whatever. So every little bit, I think, helps.
And like you said, cards that people, you know, are going to be playing anyway, and that's important.
And we have one more piece of business to talk about. This one's actually pretty fun. So Wizards put up a, I guess, contest, if you want to call it that, to build up some excitement for the World Championships. What you do is you go to this website, and it's set up so you can see all the competitors and learn about them or whatever, which is great because I think one of the things Wizards has not done as well in the past is recognize the players and really utilize them and add faces to the game. So this has been really nice. But then what's cool is after you go through that and you learn about everybody, you get to pick your champion among the 16 World Championship competitors. And everybody, it looks like everyone, because I mean, if you just participate from the winner all the way down to 16th place, whoever you pick as your champion, you're going to get one of the World Championship sleeve backs to have in Arena. Then you will get some number of randomized rares to have in your collection as well. 6, 4, 2, or 1, depending on how they finish. And then it's really cool that if you pick the person who wins, you also get a cool trophy, which looks reminiscent of the Mythic Championship trophy, as your pet in the game, that you can just have that in the game instead of one of the animals, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a pretty cool little contest. I mean, it's I appreciate it because it gets people to watch the World Championships and have a little more interest than they otherwise would.
Yeah, and even, you know, even pro sports, I think, has admitted at this point that when you got a little something on the game, you pay a little, just even little things like trophies, just largely, you know, a digital trophy will make you pay more attention. It's just psychology. We don't know how it, we don't necessarily know why it works. We know that it works.
Well, yeah, you know as well as I do. Like, we've been playing in a fantasy football league together for what, this year was our, what, 17th year? I don't know. It feels like it's been forever. I think it might have been.
And my oldest kid is 13, folks. Yeah, so yeah, it's been lifetimes for me.
Yeah, basically. It's been a while. But even beyond the paid leagues, I mean, fantasy sports have tons and tons and tons of entrants, even in the free leagues, where you're playing for nothing. But that still gets people motivated to watch, participate, look at the news every week, go to teams' websites. Like, it generates traffic. So this is kind of a take on that. Like, select the player you want and then just see what happens.
And like you said, the ability, you know, to put names with faces, that's something that I think, I won't say all, but I think a lot of esports endeavors struggle with, you know, the fact that it's really, it's the players that are going to sell your product even more than the game. Somebody to root for or somebody that you hate is going to get you invested or some combination thereof.
Yeah, I think you're right, because in between your major events or in between you spending your advertising dollars or whatever, these are the people that are going to local stores. These are the people going to conventions, that are streaming, that are writing articles, you know, doing all of these things. So if you're helping build up those personalities and those brands, it's only going to be good for you overall, I would think.
Absolutely. The more, you know, people can just, as soon as they hear that name, oh, that's so-and-so. I watched them stream, or I saw them, or heard them on the Color of Magic podcast, you know, just anything that helps you just quickly identify who that person is, and you probably, maybe you remember what deck you saw them playing last time.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that a lot of video game companies struggle with, just like you said. It's just like you're not putting enough faces to the personalities in your game. I mean, and some of that's also, I will admit, on the individuals, right? You have to know how to do your own level of brand building, promotion, whatever. And some people just aren't good at it. So if they can even get a Kickstarter, a boost from the companies to help build up that personality and create some level of longevity for them within the game, like that's got to be, there has to be some benefit there. So I really think it's cool that they've been promoting it in Arena. I've seen some of the splash slides come through. You get the web set up for this little contest page is pretty sweet. You get to highlight all the names and it pops up their face and all that and tells you about them for this season and everything. So it's really cool. I whoever's in charge of that at Wizards, congrats on the effort, because I think that will pay dividends and hopefully gets more eyes on the World Championships, because I want them to see a benefit from this so this type of stuff keeps getting greenlit down the road.
And I said, these are just fun events to watch, you know, just to get in the chat, especially now that everybody has their own person they're rooting for, you know, various reasons. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm looking forward to it for sure. Hey, you know what that means? We have a guest. Yeah, and this one's cool because this is a guy that I met on Twitter, and we've exchanged a few messages. He's been a fan of the show since early on, which is awesome. I say early on. We act like we've been doing this forever.
Yeah. Back in '06.
But really cool guy. He's a science teacher, or actually he's a teacher that actually uses gaming, you know, both D&D and Magic, to do some character building and teaching, you know, and I believe he's in the Chicago area. So let's give him a chance to kind of brag about himself and his program and tell us what he's got going on. So let's welcome Mike Wildspeaker to the show.
How you doing, y'all?
I am doing great, man. It is awesome to have you on here and get to hear more about what you got going on.
Yeah, terrific. Thank you so much for asking me to be on. I'm super excited to talk about what I do, and hopefully it's a sort of a model that can be replicated in other places.
So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about, I guess, the school that you're teaching at and then how your program kind of came to be.
Yeah, I'm a biology chemistry teacher, and it's at a Milwaukee public school. And it was maybe 8 years ago, me and a colleague decided to start a games club there where students could play Magic and other board games that we had. We were board game enthusiasts and D&D, and so we pooled some of our stuff together. And we expressly wanted to bring all of the multifaceted benefits of gaming to what are underrepresented demographics in the gaming community at large, and all the benefits of, you know, intellectual stimulation, challenging yourself, making friends, having a social structure, having a safe place for all the nerds in the school to hang out and play games and have a good time. And, you know, it's something I would have killed for in high school myself. That colleague has since left it, and I've taken it up, and it's really blossomed over the years into something really big.
That's cool. So is this something you do like twice a week or three times a week, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's one day a week after school. So immediately after school for 2 hours or so, and the students pour in and play all their games and look forward to it every week.
Awesome. And how many students do you normally have, and do you see growth in the program, or how's that going?
Yeah, it's gotten bigger every year. There's about 30 members now, and it's pretty evenly split between D&D players and Magic the Gathering players, and all of them also dabble in other games occasionally. We, you know, ones that I buy through fundraising or that people donate and stuff like that, and people bounce back and forth between the two things as their whatever pricks their interest.
That is really cool. 30 people is a pretty good size for an after school program. I mean, I've worked with a few myself, and sometimes you were happy to have 10 or 12 kids show up. So 30 is a real good number.
It started out that way. Yeah. It's grown tremendously.
And how many years have you been doing this?
8 years, I think. It could be off by a year, but yeah.
Nice. And you said you have another teacher that helps you with this as well?
Yeah, the original founding person kind of left and moved on from it. I have another colleague who's a sign language interpreter who does it with me. Sometimes they kind of sub when I can't make it. Like during the wrestling season, I coach wrestling. And so they take it over for those couple of months that I'm doing that full time.
Oh, that's fantastic. Cool. And you have a sign language teacher participating. So that's also cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a lot of deaf and hard of hearing students, and there's a lot of interpreters that make things accessible for them. Yeah. There's
like
actually
a movie.
Kind of cool
I
story
absolutely
about,
wish I had this program or something like this when I was in high school. This,
one
this
deaf and hard of hearing student who came in and I taught her magic. And she, you know, it was like the first couple of weeks of the club, and she sort of wandered in and was, you know, looking around, not really sure where to go. And, you know, everybody was kind of humming along in their games, you know, so I came up to her and I said, oh, hi, you know, welcome to Game Club. I'm so-and-so, you know, what were you thinking about coming here to play? So I got to teaching her Magic the Gathering for the first time. I gave her some welcome decks and taught her all that stuff. And one of the things that she seemed to be like trepidatious about is the person that she was talking to had to wear a microphone so she could hear it in her implant. And so I, you know, wore this microphone, no problem, and taught her magic and all that kind of stuff. You know, and then she comes back the next week. She loved it. And she immediately went right up to me and I said, I want to play magic with you. And I said, oh, okay, well, check this out. I think I'm going to try to, you know, tear down some barriers here and you know, to see if she can go out of her comfort zone a little bit and just play with some of the other students and you know, kind of build her up here. And so, yeah, I just introduced her to a group that was playing and, you know, said, yeah, she just learned magic and she's got her, you know, welcome decks here and just wants to, you know, kind of jump in and whatever. And she went right in seamlessly. And the beauty of magic is you don't need to necessarily like have that communication, right? Like you can just point to cards and turn them sideways and everybody kind of knows what they're all doing. So none of her classmates like, you know, had to wear her mic that she was seemed to be nervous about. And she like had a blast, totally loved it. And you know, that was just a really beautiful moment for me that stands out.
Man, I need to get me like an applause button to have in our sound dump because that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of magic, right? I mean, it transcends so many barriers. You know, how many times have you played with somebody, you know, like at a tournament, and you know, like they got some heavy accent you can't understand, or they're, you know, there's so many like, you know, language barriers that are transcended through playing this game, and people, you know, get to know each other that never could have otherwise.
So your school sounds interesting because it sounds like you have some, I guess, underprivileged students, and then you also have some hearing difficult students and whatnot. So like, what's the breakdown on your kind of like student body there?
Yeah, it's pretty cool that it's a sort of a melting pot of the whole Milwaukee community. I mean, it's definitely situated in the urban neighborhoods of the city, and it's maybe 70%-ish African-American, and the rest is pretty evenly split among Latinos, white kids, Asian kids. There's a big Hmong community in Milwaukee. So the rest is pretty evenly split across those, and it represents our whole city really well.
That's cool.
In Milwaukee public schools, there, you know, different schools have different sort of specialties with some of these like special needs stuff. So we have a bunch of sign language interpreters and deaf and hard of hearing students. We also have a lot of autistic students at our school and staff that are you know, trained to address their needs. And so, you know, not every school has like a big group of deaf and hard of hearing or autistic kids, and you know, they kind of try to set them up for success by making programs like that.
So when you decided to get this type of program off the ground, how difficult was it? Like, did you have to jump through a bunch of hoops, or how did you even secure, I guess, the permissions or the money or whatever to kind of make that happen?
Yeah. So it wasn't a lot of hoops as far as, you know, choosing to do it. I just stay after school for, you know, 2 hours or so in my classroom running it. And, you know, as long as I'm an adult there, you know, and I say I'm responsible for these students and, you know, I'm making sure they're, you know, nothing the administration or principals would object to is going on. Then they're like, yeah, okay, go ahead. Starting off, I just donated a lot of games that I had. I went and, you know, got solicited like friends and community members for like used games or anything that they said that they could donate. The Magic all started out of my own collection, and I just brought in, you know, bulk cards and other stuff that that I was willing to give away. But I ran out of that really fast. You know, all my Fallen Empires bulk got chewed up pretty quick. And, you know, so then I started trying to figure out other ways I could kind of fundraise for it and get support for it. And Twitter ended up being extremely generous in that way. And, you know, it's since people have generously shipped things to the school or, you know, I've done fundraisers to do like a free pre-release at the school. You know, people have just sent me like, oh, here's a box or two of stuff for the kids. Just, you know, go draft. And so we've, you know, in the last couple of years, we've been amazingly supported and I've been able to do just the coolest stuff. Just, hey, you want to play Commander? Like, here's a Commander pre-con somebody just sent to the school to give to you, you know. Hey, let's, you know, next week we'll do a draft. Everybody show out. And then, you know, it's like 12 kids. We all go and do a draft. So it's been, you know, started pretty meager and it's really blossomed.
Cool. I want to ask, and you know, because you've been saying you've been doing this for 8 years, you know, how many of your students have you seen go on and start teaching other people or going out to local stores and getting involved in those events or even going and attending a tournament or something?
Yeah, I've definitely seen former students out there in the scene. I'm not as in the competitive Magic scene anymore. So it's not like I'm a tournament grinder or anything. But at my LGS, you know, I see students coming out to there and, you know, I directly talk to the LGS about it and I've built relationships, with them. So, you know, they give me an awesome discount on stuff I get for the club. And I let them know like, hey, you know, so yeah, these, you know, hey, that pre-release you did, like there's three kids from my school that came to it, you know? So, it's a synergistic, benefits going both ways for that. And, so that's been great. There, you know, there's tons of kids who are going out and, entering the scene and getting into Magic. It's terrific.
Man, that sounds like a really cool program. And you know, it's kind of like Brian was saying earlier. I mean, I true also wish I had that type of thing there when I was growing up, because even in the high school, we kind of had to just create our own group of people that we hung out after school or we went to some local spot and played cards, you know, on our own. We didn't really have faculty or community programs are really pushing it back then. So this is really cool.
Yeah, I was actively discouraged from playing Magic. My experience, I felt conspicuously uncool playing Magic, like in the cafeteria.
I think we all felt conspicuously uncool.
Yeah, and so that, like, those are the things that I wanted, those obstacles that I wanted to tear down. I want these kids to have a place where, you know, somebody celebrates these interests of theirs. You know, whether it's playing Magic, the D&D players, you know, they're like making tons of art all the time and just, you know, filling notebooks up with campaigns and ideas and just churning out this stuff. And I'm just cheering them on the whole way. It's awesome. You know, I would love so much to see some of these students go on to work in the games industry because they have this humongous passion for it. It's incredible.
I think it's a great first step. You know, I think it takes things like this to expose some games or even just ideas or products or other things to a part of the community that doesn't necessarily have a lot of current representation in it. You know, and I think that goes a long way toward getting those people to eventually be part of those communities or be part of those industries, you know, say 6, 7, 8 years from now.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the reasons that it's underrepresented are, you know, things to do with financial access to the game, geographic access to an LGS, and running it right after school in the school for free, just evaporates a lot of those problems. And, I just want to see the game get more diverse, more people in it, and just anybody that loves this game, come on in and let's grow the community.
Well, now that we had a chance to learn more about you and about your program, if you're up for it, we've got 5 fire questions ready for you.
Bring it on.
Our guests tend to be very sharp, but let's see how they respond when we put their feet to the fire in 5 fire questions. All right, so one of the first things I want to ask, because I know this is something, you know, having worked with other schools and programs myself, how much money have you, or would you say even like yearly, do you put into something like this that comes out of your pocket? Because I don't think a lot of people understand that there's not a ton of money available in a lot of these schools to go into these types of programs. And a lot of times the faculty member that's the sponsor or supporter of a thing ends up paying for a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I would say many hundreds of dollars per year to go into the game club. It's been really terrifically supported on Twitter more so recently though. And, you know, once a year I do a fundraiser to do a free pre-release and try to buy as many pre-release kits as I can. And just have the kids, crack those and get their own free pre-release without having to go anywhere or buy anything. And they've been like overwhelmingly supported. You know, people are just, signal boosting it and coming out of the woodwork to donate stuff. You know, there's a lot of trolls on Twitter, but there's also a ton of people that just, yeah, here, dude, you know, buy 2, 3, 4 pre-release kits for these kids. I think your program's great. Keep doing what you're doing. I want to support it. And it just blows my mind. It's so terrific.
Yeah. I always try to remind people as though there's a lot of negativity on the internet, if you curate it right, there's a lot of positivity out there too.
Yep. It's both ways. Yeah. And I've gotten people, you know, trolling me for like, you know, talking about some of the, you know, diversity issues related to the game and stuff like that. And
that's okay. That's why we're here, to help fight the fight.
Yeah, really.
So my second question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say like one of them that happened to be kind of recently, a few months ago. Sort of you on your show, you talked about it pretty directly when you were talking about the expression, I don't see color. So I was out there talking about how great it's been in my experience that there's been more and more representation in Magic the Gathering. And I posted a picture of like the welcome decks from 5 years ago or something. And it was all white people on every color deck. And then the ones they just came out with, which is on the, you know, it's 5 colors, and on it is one of them is Vivian Reed and Sarkin, and let's see, like a Johnny, and then Lily and Tezzeret is on the 5 welcome decks, you know. And I said, yeah, so like here's an upgrade to diversity. Like instead of just saying, hey, which one of these white people looks most interesting to you? It's which one of these slightly more diverse group of creatures looks most interesting to you. And somebody's like, you know, oh, whatever, man, who cares? Like, you know, why does every person on the planet have to like see themselves represented? Like, oh, you guys. And like in the same breath has said, like, I don't see color. Like, you know.
Like, yep.
Yeah, it's fine that everybody's white, you know, like I don't see color. That's cool. We have more representation. They're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, what's up with this?
Yeah, that's just a tough one, you know, and you kind of look and just say like, dude, that's literally the problem is that you can't see any color.
Yeah.
All right. So my second question, and this is a tough one, so I will give you an out, but do you have a high achieving student come out of your program that you expect to see something from magic wise? If not, what is your favorite story that's developed through your program?
There's a lot of students with a lot of cool potential that I really look forward to seeing how far they can go. Like, you know, whether it's being part of helping design the game or whether it's, you know, being an artist for the game, or any of these other, you know, the D&D kids, you know, writing some stuff for it or starting a website or who knows. I'm really excited for that. One really cool experience that I think injected a lot of inspiration into that was a collaboration I did with Vorthos Mike, who is from Minnesota and does a lot of art promotion and art dealing and sets up like the Magic Art Show that's been, you know, successful and talked about in a alongside a lot of you know magic events. And so he was doing a Magic the Gathering art show at MIAD University in Milwaukee, which is the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design. So it's an art school. And he reached out to me and said, hey, I want to do a field trip with your kids and just take them to the art show and show them the stuff and you know, give them a whole experience. Maybe they can like tour the university and just kind of see what's out there for art careers. And I said, that sounds awesome. Can you pay for everything? Because like, if I go to my principal, you're like, oh, here's this cool opportunity. Can you like pay for my bus and their lunch? And then they're going to be like, yeah, we don't have money for that. So Mike, Vorthos Mike went out there and fundraised, mostly on Twitter, it seemed like to me, but I don't know. He did a big fundraiser thing on Twitter and raised all the money and way more that we would need to do this. The support was just like overwhelming. And so it paid for the bus, which was just a couple $100. It paid for their lunch. And we had many hundreds of dollars left over that I split between gift cards to a local game store and gift cards to a art supply store in Milwaukee. And I just let the kids pick out whichever one they wanted. Cause it was like half of the group was kids from my game club and the other half was kids from art classes at our school. And yeah, we just gave them these gift cards, put them on a bus, took them over and checked out the beautiful, amazing art show with, you know, tons of, you know, paintings, things that they would never see. And they toured the whole university and, you know, got a sense of what it's like to go to art school. And a ton of them were just juiced. They're just like, yes, this is what I want to do in life right here. Let's go. That was one of the,
man, mad props to Vorthos Mike.
Yeah, he is incredible. He, yeah, just came out and said, hey, let's make this happen. What do you need from me? What can I do? And I said, okay, well, I can book this stuff and do this and this and that, but, you know, I'll need this and that. And he just hustled and got it done. It's terrific.
That's awesome. I mean, that seriously, to just go out of his way to raise that much money and give those kids that type of opportunity, especially like you're saying, some got the exposure to just give them the, I guess, the direction of this is what they want to do.
Right.
How many of them missed that opportunity in life or still aren't sure if they don't get to have that moment?
Yeah, it's all about, you know, a lot of them would be first generation kids to go to college. So, you know, they don't have people that they can emulate that are, you know, in their, that are siblings or living in the same house as them or parents of theirs, you know, and so experiences like this are disproportionately beneficial to a student like that.
All right. And my last question is, if you can put this out into the universe, if there's any one thing you could have for your after school program, what would it be?
Oh, like just money is no object. What things would I want?
Yeah. Anything that would make the program better for you right now, what would it be?
Boy, like the as far as Magic goes, the overwhelmingly favorite format is Commander. So students that are, you know, are in the club, they're either playing pure straight up kitchen table Magic because they've only known the game for just, you know, a few months. That, you know, they learned it this year, you know, so they're just like, all right, man, here's my mountains and my red cards, you know. And or they're playing Commander, and so those are like the more experienced students. And you know, when they start taking it seriously, right, they, I mean, they can start looking up deck techs and you know, really tuning up their decks, and so it becomes rough when students are just getting like totally creamed and are not having a good time anymore because they don't financially have access to like some of the cards other students do. And, you know, and then they're bummed out and for some of them, they lose interest over that, you know, so like to just have a card pool, I could just give kids whatever would be just totally awesome. What I do with a lot of things that I get, all the stuff that goes to the club, I either directly give it to students. You know, I might find some kid who's in that situation who's like, you know, this kid seems like they could use a Commander deck. Like they, you know, they're really into it, but they've never showed up with one. And I'm just gonna, all right, somebody sent this Commander deck. Boom, that's yours. Cool. So I'll either give it away or I'll put it on like this prize wall kind of system we have that I call Game for Grades. And they turn in A's on stuff to earn stuff. So I have like stuff you can get for 1A, stuff you can get for 3A's, stuff you can get for 5A's. So they'll save up their A's and be like, boom, here you go. Let me get these D&D minis. Let me get this, you know, this this one rare out of the one thing. And yeah, so stuff like that, I turn into a prize wall. So yeah, to have a humongous card pool and I could just have the prize wall just be a glorious, you know, hey, you want to fetch land? All right, give me 5A's. That'd be awesome.
Man, that would have been so much more interesting to me when I was in school, because if I got A's, we got like the personal pan pizza thing at like Pizza Hut or whatever. Yeah.
So it's awesome and it's really motivating for a lot of kids, you know. I mean, yeah, how much would you hustle if you know, A's got you free Magic cards when you were a teenager with no job?
I want to play. Can I turn in?
Right?
That would have been fantastic. Seriously. I think they've got a good thing going. So, Brian, what two questions do you have for Mike?
All right. At what age would you say you made the transition from, you know, I think most kids' natural state, which is teachers are icky, to, oh, my God, I think I want to be a teacher. When do you feel like you really started making that transition?
So I went to college in Milwaukee here at UW-Milwaukee, and I initially went and just studied biology, a straight biology degree, because it was just kind of infinitely interesting to me. So I thought, all right, this is something I can study. I'll do well in. I probably won't totally hate what I end up doing. You know, and near the end of it, my degree, I'm like, what am I going to do, though? Maybe I'll try teaching, I guess. Like that seems like I would enjoy that. I'm a people person. And then when I started student teaching, I immediately knew I'd made the right choice. No regrets. Absolutely love it. You know, and it's a hugely stressful job. It's not that financially rewarding, you know, for people with comparable education, you know, but I absolutely love it. It's, you know, and being able to just add on to this, like doing this Magic Club, stuff like coaching are things that I never thought I would do, you know, and, you know, I taught for many years before it occurred to me and this colleague, hey, let's start a games club. You know, there's probably some gamers in here, or if there aren't, it just hasn't occurred to them to try that yet. And so stuff like this has just been totally awesome and just icing on the cake of a profession that I really have a passion for.
That is great. So who would you say was your favorite fictional teacher?
Favorite fictional teacher.
There's a lot to pick from.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to cite something kind of weird, kind of out there. I'm really into science fiction, and there's a Philip K. Dick novel I can't remember its name right now, but he's a science fiction author, and he had this book where there was a school where all of the teachers in the school were androids, but they were androids of like famous people. So you would like go to history class and it would be taught by an android of Frederick Douglass. And then you'd go to, you know, gym class and it'd be taught by Michael Jordan. And so there's like all these androids going around like teaching your stuff. You know, you go to, you know, history class and Julius Caesar would be there teaching your class. And I thought that was a fascinating concept.
I'm down with that. Yeah, I would. Who wouldn't love that? Yeah. Elon Musk, get on that, would you?
Yeah, right.
That's an interesting choice. I kind of dig that.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a compelling thing. It's probably a total threat to my, you know, career. But.
Yeah, I don't even know who I would have selected for that answer. I was seriously going through my head. I'm like,
yeah, nothing came to me. And I thought of that kind of weird sci-fi story that I never forgot.
I would say Robin Williams' character from Dead Poets Society. That gets me every time.
Yeah, that's a good sure. one. He's I think so another great. One for me, and it really comes down to one scene for me, but Gene Hackman in Hoosiers. There's that scene where he takes them to the gym when they make it to the like the big tournament or whatever, and he gets his assistant to get on a ladder to measure the basket, and he just looks at the team and goes, "Yeah, still 10 feet, boys." And then that's it. Like just that little bit, I'm like so impactful for such a simple action. You know, I'm like, anytime you can have those moments as an instructor, those are so powerful.
Yeah, my favorite sports movie is Friday Night Lights. Because the team loses in the end. And, you know, not everybody gets to be the one champion, right? So 99% of sports is how do you find redemption in...
Yeah, that's very true.
Even Michael Jordan says, you know, I succeed because I failed so many times.
Yeah, yeah, right? A winner is just a loser who tried one more time.
That's a good way to look at it.
I like that one.
So, yeah, well, since we got you here... We wanted to talk a little bit on Dinner Table Talk about why we think, and I'm sure we each have a different kind of take on this, but why don't more companies push programs to underprivileged schools? And
so this is something that I've tried to In the history of my running the game club, you know, some of my first efforts at fundraising was like writing emails to companies, you know, including Wizards, trying to get support for it. And, you know, I spent like many hours writing this, you know, thoroughly overwritten email, tried to like talk about all the benefits that could be like, hey, I'm in this school with, you know, demographics that are way underrepresented in your sales. It's just such a no-brainer for you. And, you know, like here's this awesome opportunity for, you know, supporting a school and right. It's like, you know, it's, you know, those got nowhere. I've gotten things sent to me directly from Wizards, but it was in this sort of roundabout sort of weird way. You know, it was through like my Twitter fundraisers and stuff, where, you know, I'm just saying, oh, hey, you know, if you can, you know, donate so one of my students can come to a free pre-release, you know, and then somebody from like Wizards, you know, fulfillment is like, oh yeah, what's the address of your school? We're going to send you a box of pre-release kits. And I was like, whoa, really? Yeah, cool. Thank you. Here's the address. And you know, they send the stuff. I'm like, this is awesome. Like, is this something we could, like, you know, a relationship we could set up and continue to support, and who can I talk to about that? And I got cool ideas about like how you can support schools and stuff. And those conversations never really got very far. Like but you know, the person I was talking to on the other end wasn't somebody who was like had the authority to do that. And you know, I said, oh, can you put me in touch with somebody? And didn't really get anywhere. So I, you know, I don't even know what person at Wizards saw my fundraiser, and I could speculate, I guess, but you know, they're like, oh yeah, send the school this stuff. And I've heard about other things like that sort of happening where, you know, employees of Wizards find out about some, you know, charitable thing or cool community thing, and they come out and support it. But that you know, that to really change like demographically what we see in the gaming community, would you'd have to systematize something like this, and you know, and that'll have a far bigger impact than a one-off, two-off here and there of, you know, cool things that happen to get lucky enough to, you know, get some Twitter traction or whatever.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think one of the things that's tough is, I think at a corporate level, and this isn't just Wizards. I mean, this is for several companies I've worked with on different projects. The conversation kind of comes up with like, well, okay, but who is our demographic? And they kind of look at their numbers and analysis and go, okay, well, us giving money here isn't going to do as much because this particular group, whatever group we happen to be talking about, isn't one of our people effectively. And not, I guess they just don't realize that, like, well, they're not currently somebody who buys your thing because you haven't made the effort to make them somebody who buys your thing. You know, it either naturally happened, just, you know, virally or whatever, attached itself to certain groups, and now those are the people buying it. But if you make an effort, this is a whole untapped community for you to profit from 3 years from now, 7 years from now, whatever, as you build up that base from this new untapped group. And it's amazing, you know, like you're saying, how many of them don't want to make it regular as far as, I mean, because just like you're saying, they do give stuff away. They do have programs, or even, I'm not even saying give it away. Work a program to, I don't know, where whatever the group is you're trying to support can just buy the thing at cost, even. That would be fine.
Yeah, yeah. That would be a game changer too for a lot of places. You know, the Wizards has like this formal club program too that I utilized one time, and they send you a bunch of like Planeswalker decks and welcome decks and like some beginner play mats with like the zones of the game label on there. And, you know, you get some of those and, you know, my club swallowed those up like real fast. And, you know, I didn't think it's a thing that I should be like, hey, can you send 10 more of these or something, you know?
But, you know, if they're already budgeted for, then as long as, and, you know, maybe there's a system set up for proof of something, like, I don't know, maybe some number of them has to register DCI numbers or go to an event or whatever. But if you set your checks and balances in place, then that's better to have a program like yours that's registering some, you know, 15 or 20 new kids a year. You know, like, if that means you have to get two kits a year, three kits a year, then great. If it keeps that funnel going to generate more players and expose their products to more people, then awesome. You're doing the footwork for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that demographics analysis, you know, is something that occurred to me when you said that is, you know, every demographic and culture and group like has its nerds. You know, I introduce Magic to so many kids and it's, you know, they hadn't seen it before and they just immediately fall in love with it. You know, it's just, you know, whether it's like the art or the strategy or, you know, whatever, like there's nerds, you know, for lack of a better word, that are, you know, drawn into this. And, you know, like to, yeah, it's those kind of corporate meetings you describe where they would just, kind of say, well, you know, yeah, that's not a demographic or anything, was, you know, that struck me as being so.
Oh, no, I'm with you. We've talked about it on the show where, you know, Brian and I both, we are the nerds in our immediate families or group of people, you know, or were, you know, growing up. So if somebody, and I'll be honest, the only reason I was exposed to Magic is I happened to be going into a game store at the time that was in like a shopping mall in Corpus Christi, Texas. No clue what Magic was, just the guy at the counter was kind of excited about it and explaining it to me. And I'm like, okay, well, that sounds kind of neat. But if it wasn't for that random interaction, I mean, I don't even know if I would have ever touched Magic in the future, but it at least would have been some amount of time longer before I got my hands on it.
Yeah, yeah. And it, you know, it's such a compelling game. It's, yeah, once you introduce it to, you know, X amount of people, there will be some percentage that are just totally drawn
in. And he wouldn't have met me, and it's a whole, and this podcast doesn't exist, and it's a butterfly effect, man.
In some ways, you know, but I'll say this. the thing that's good about building up these programs in school is I think it's even more powerful than teaching individuals, or I guess for any product, really, like exposing individuals to your products, say at a convention or a fair or something else, because there's always the social part of the whole thing, right? Like if you see your friends doing it or you meet other people doing it that become friends, then it becomes more socially acceptable for you to spend your time and money on this new thing, whatever it is. So in this case, magic, right? You're teaching these kids to play, but they're also making friends, and now their friends also play the game. So now they're going to think of that as being their first activity to do versus, I don't know, going and playing video games or something else, because they have friends that are now interested in the game. And it becomes easier to introduce new people. Because when they look and go, well, this seems kind of dumb, whatever, you're like, well, but I already have these other 10 people that play if you want to come check it out. And now it sounds more compelling.
Yeah.
Peer pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I teach magic to scores of kids every year. Half of them I teach the game to, and I give them the welcome deck and they'll don't come back, but you know, that's fine. But so many students every single year I'm getting into the game and they're joining in the fold of our, you know, magic players and D&D circle and kids playing all the other games. And yeah, it's, you know, once you sort of get something like that going with a little support, it really amplifies so much of,
yeah, and I can tell you from experience, you know, I've worked conventions, even when I worked for Wizards, I worked a couple of conventions, you know, even with my store, whatever. And the return rate or the hit rate you get from that effort is small. I mean, granted, you will get a lot of people, but it's also because I saw like, I don't know, 5,000 people over the course of the weekend. Well, if I get 300 of them, well, that looks really good, but it's really a small percentage of the number of people you saw. But I can say that when I've worked with schools or school groups all the way from, you know, middle school up to colleges, when you have something like that going, we see more immediate effects, even with smaller groups of people. So I'm wondering, and again, this comes back to maybe that's just not something they see, because maybe they only see 100 people and they go, well, that was only 100 people. But you look back and say, yeah, but over the course of the year, we only saw 500 people. So that's a 20% return for the effort we put out. And that's pretty strong.
Yeah.
When you get people while they're young, they have so much more free time to invest in something. They don't know what they want to do, you know, with their lives or with their hobbies yet.
Even more than that, though, I think you shape what they view as their form of entertainment. Right. Like if the younger you start somebody, like, again, I started playing Magic, I don't know, I guess my sophomore year of high school or whatever, that became the thing I wanted to do. And that took over from me doing like sports cards, comic books, you know, whatever else. I was thinking about building a Magic deck first. So as I got older, Magic was like the activity I thought about before thinking about those other things. So if I was going to decide where I wanted to spend money, or where I wanted to spend time, or what I wanted to introduce somebody to, it was going to be Magic first. So if you get them when they're younger, when they're still socializing and still around their school groups and their social groups, like, that's the time you want somebody.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And the teenage years, you have all that disposable income and you want those kids that are first getting into the game, you know, I mean, like the a lot gets talked about, right? Like legacy players and those formats that are just like, you know, thousands and thousands of dollar decks. But how much money is Wizards making from that? You know, if you go on a website and, you know, you buy a, you know, like a legacy Infect deck, Wizards is not making any money off of that, right? But if you're taking your first jobs, paycheck after paycheck after paycheck, and, you know, you're just cracking packs and buying their Planeswalker decks and all that stuff, I mean, that's where they're really making bank.
And I think I'll also say that I don't think I've ever had a problem getting to run a program with a school that just needed another activity. Like, I was able to go to the schools and say, hey, I have this idea. A couple of kids from the school came into my place. They were interested. You know, and I've done board games, Magic, disc golf, you know, you name it. Like, every program, the schools have been like, great. If you can, you know, you have to go through the checks and balance. You have to pass the background check and do all that stuff. But like, assuming you're willing to do all that, like, they will invite you in to run or give away whatever the heck you want, as long as it's low cost to them. Like, there's almost no barrier to entry.
Yeah, absolutely. If you build it, they will come.
I like that. Can we use that? If you build it, they will come. It's good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. that's how my club worked out.
Yeah, and it's, like I said, because there's no barrier, I mean, there's really no reason. And this is, whether we're talking about Magic or video games or, I don't know, skateboard brands, whatever. Like, there's no reason for them to be avoiding these underprivileged schools. Like, they are the ones with most open arms. And believe me, I have tried to work with some other schools on some programs, and there was very much like, well, we don't know. And well, the parents may not like that. Well, let's put it in front of the PTA and let's do blah, blah, you know, like, there are definitely way more hoops around other schools that have high dollar programs. Like, and some of them already have like partnerships with certain people. So you can and can't do or say or promote certain things or whatever. Like, you're not going to run into any of those programs in any of these other schools. Like, if you show up and say,
yeah,
I have this thing, I want to give away this much stuff, I have these two or three people certified to run whatever it is, I'd be shocked if you don't get a yes.
Yeah, say same. Some people, you know, or you'll run into it. Some of the more privileged schools think Magic is the devil, you know.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't run into that much of that anymore. Yeah, that was something that I heard a lot about when, you know, back in the 90s when I was first starting to play, like, oh yeah, so-and-so's mom took away all their Magic cards and said, you know, like, it was against their religion or something. I don't hear a ton about that these days. I'm plugged into the, you know, those.
We'll save that for a future episode, because, man, I have some stories.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I both started in the early days of Magic, and I lived the majority of my life in a large chunk of the Bible Belt. So those two things together lead to some interesting stories.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to hear them.
But yeah, I think that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Mike, why don't you tell everybody how they can find you on social media if they want to reach out to you or even donate something to your programs?
Yeah, I am at Mike Wild Speaker. And get a hold of me, please, if you, you know, just to follow, just to talk Magic, just to, you know, and if you want to donate anything to the club, it'll be, like I said, used to give directly to kids or have them earn it through good grades. So if you're interested in supporting teenagers and especially underrepresented demographics in the game and increasing the diversity and tearing down barriers for access to the game, if that's you, get a hold of me, and you can donate to the club or send things to the school, and you'll make a lot of kids happy.
Brian, where can they find you?
I am DL Caesar. That's spelled just like the Roman Emperor on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter.
And as usual, I am Power Dragon, PowerDragn. You can find me on most social media channels. Lately, you can find a bunch of deck tech stuff I'm putting up over on YouTube. And you can find me on Twitch now on a regular schedule on Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays at 9 p.m. Pacific time. Again, thanks everybody for listening, wherever you're listening from, whenever you're listening. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.